Good afternoon. It's Friday, the 16th of March, 2018, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today are Michael and
yes,
Michael Robinson and Brian Gerrish. And we're delighted to be joined by David Scott. Of course, David reporting from north of the border. We're smiling. We're happy because the Russians are coming. And the country seems to be taking this in good spirit, Mike.
Absolutely. We can bring David Scott straight in here. Nicola Sturgeon says, Scotland ready for chemical weapons attack. David, are you ready?
Well, Nicola's ready. The rest of us have barely stopped laughing at that headline. It's just ridiculous. And on the subject of ridiculous, a quick Nicola Sturgeon story from the week is really rather beautiful. She was at a concert and there was an announcement at the concert that there was a very important person visiting, the First Minister's here, and would people mind moving from five seats in the front row so she could have a good view? Nobody moved. Right? After a few awkward moments, one chap stood up and then took his coat off and sat back down, and the very angry Nicola Sturgeon had to file in at the back of the hall. No one was interested, and that's far more significant, I think, than her preparation for the Russian chemical attack.
Okay, David, I wonder whether you could just drop her a quick tweet or a line and say that it's probably not a good idea that she has so much bare flesh if she's claiming to be ready for a chemical attack.
There are memes circulating on Twitter where Nicola is wearing a hazmat suit and standing outside a bunker. With the same headline that Scotland is ready for the chemical attack. People are picking up on this.
Good stuff. Well, to keep the comedy value going, here we go. Salisbury attack, joint statement from the leaders of France, Germany, the United States and the United Kingdom. And so they've decided to gang up. We, the leaders of France, Germany, the United States and the United Kingdom, abhor the attack that took place against Sergei and Yulia Skripal in Salisbury. On the 4th of March, a British police officer who was exposed to the attack remained seriously ill. The use of military-grade nerve agent, and so it goes on. The United Kingdom briefed thoroughly its allies, and it was highly likely that Russia was responsible for the attack. So the joint statement does not confirm blame. It says highly likely. And they expressed their concerns being also heightened against the background of a pattern of earlier irresponsible behaviour from Russia. We call on Russia to live up to its responsibilities as a member of the UN Security Council to uphold international peace and security. So there you go from the joint statement. That's fantastic. Gavin Williamson, of course, yesterday said that Russia should go away and shut up. Well, Russia hasn't gone away and it hasn't shut up. So this is what Sergei Lavrov had to say. Gavin Williamson seems like a nice young man. He probably wants to get a place in history by making bold statements. We are not offended by his remarks. He probably lacks upbringing. That was Lavrov's comments. The defense ministry went a bit further. They said that he had an extreme degree of intellectual impotence. So there you go. In the meantime, what has Craig Murray been saying, Brian?
Well, this is quite straightforward. He's basically saying that pressure was put on Porton Down for them to come out with a statement that the government wanted. That statement would have been that it was Russian manufacturing that had been done. And he says somebody senior in the Foreign and Commonwealth Office was very happy to say Porton Down scientists were not able to identify the nerve gas as being of Russian manufacture. And to use the language, they were pissed off that pressure was being put on them by the UK government. And he's put that up on his website under a title of a type developed by liars. And that's spot on, I think.
Absolutely. Well, in the meantime, this weekend, it's due to get cold again. And because it's going to get cold again, then we have to blame the Russians. So the Met Office, or BBC Weather, sorry, saying Siberian air mass continues to move across our shores this weekend on a strong and bitter easterly wind. So we're being attacked by the Siberian air mass. Good stuff. The memes and the tweets are just, Patrick Henningsen pushed this around earlier on. We've got Theresa May standing beside Putin with the dead body of Snow White lying on the ground. And of course, Theresa May is pointing at Snow White and looking sternly at Putin. So this stuff continues, but there's probably echoes what you were saying yesterday, Brian. This is from a services Facebook page. Tri-Service Guidance Briefing Note, April 2018. With immediate effect, all previously briefed CBRN NBC decontamination drills are not required following the Russian attack in Salisbury. Home Office guidance is that in the event of chemical attack, the only equipment required, only the equipment below is required. Turns out that all the NBC CBRN training was a waste of time, and they've got a picture of a washing machine.
Yeah. And that is somebody, my opinion, is trained, because they're using the right language, and this is the sort of publication that circulates in the military, talking about serious things. And whoever put that together also knows that we have just watched a pantomime following a so-called nerve agent attack.
And I have to say that watching many of the comments in foreign media, in Eastern Europe, for example, and other countries, there is no belief in Britain's position here. Britain is being universally laughed at by ordinary people right around Europe, that I've seen anyway. We should be proud of ourselves, shouldn't we?
Okay.
Yes. Let's move on to more serious matters now. David, the bridge in Florida, this is the video that the school or the campus, Florida International University's campus, was pushing out a couple of days ago of this bridge being installed just on Saturday. Unfortunately, as most people will have seen by now, it did collapse. It has killed 6 people is the latest figure. But you gave me this graphic yesterday showing where the failure has happened. Just give us a little bit on this.
Yes, the bridge is a very wide concrete structure. It was to provide a link between student accommodation, very high quality, very palatial student accommodation, and the main campus. Therefore, there was tables and sort of field planters and things on the bridge, so there was a lot of room to move about. It was to be a street up in the air. The bridge was to be two span. There was the central pier was to extend upwards, and a whole series of cable stays were to come down and support the bridge. So in its final case, in its final situation, yes, there's an illustration here. The final arrangement of this bridge was a two-span bridge with a central pier and an arrangement of cable stays to support the load. Now, what had been erected was one span. So the unique thing about bridge construction is the way they're built and the way they're designed has to be coordinated, because it's integral to the structural problems involved. The way that they're designed has to take into account the construction method. The construction method in this case was one span was placed first, simply supported, no cable stays, no nothing, and that was designed to be sufficiently strong to hold its own self-weight and minor construction loads, not the live load that would be added to the bridge later. And then the second span was to go in the tower and the cable stays. Now, what happened is a failure happened with this one span in its temporary condition. The illustration I've got here is, you could see from the photograph that the deck had become detached at the end. Now, the deck's the tie of this truss, so the inclined member you see there has got compression forces pushing down. That seems to have pulled away from the deck, and with that connection being lost, the truss that formed the bridge no longer worked, and then the top cord of the truss simply formed a hinge and broke, and the whole thing fell to the deck. Now fell to the road below. Now the critical thing here is obviously the structural failure, but also the communication, because did the people building the bridge and the people designing the bridge communicate? Did the construction method that was used, was that understood by the designer? Was it properly assessed? These are the questions that we'll be looking for answers in the weeks and months to come.
But David, of course, that's a new bridge under construction, but the United States has a fairly big problem with bridges in general, as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago. 54,000 American bridges structurally deficient, according to an analysis of new federal data. So I hope that we don't see more of this type of tragedy occurring, but the United States has to do something about its infrastructure pretty quickly.
So it would seem, yes, that there have been alarm bells being sounded for many years on the quality of American infrastructure and its maintenance and its load capacity. Trucks are getting heavier, loads are getting larger the whole time, and some of the old infrastructure will be struggling.
Yeah, okay. Moving on, back to the UK. Now, four types of child abuse, we're told. There are four types. Physical abuse, deliberately physically hurting a child. Emotional abuse, causing a child ongoing emotional harm. Sexual abuse, any sexual activity with a child. And neglect. This is the new phase of a campaign to tackle child abuse, apparently, launched yesterday. According to analysis from YouGov, 26% of adults said that they had worried about the welfare, neglect or abuse of a child, of which 42% did not report their suspicions to someone with child protection responsibilities. So this is all about encouraging people to report suspicions through a new government website, which is at gov.uk/tackle-child-abuse. If you think it, report it is the sort of tag that they're applying to this. Among parents of under 16s, they say 31% had worried about a child's welfare or about abuse or neglect of a child in the local area, and 57% went on to say that they went on to take some action on that. And so what they are aiming to do is to inform the public about the different types of child abuse and neglect, educate the public on how to spot the signs, and reassure people on how the reporting process works, as well as supporting them through it. Now, Brian, I thought this was quite ironic in many ways, hypocritical perhaps, because how many cases do we have on the UK Columns books of people who attempted to report abuse of children in certain circumstances and ended up having their own children removed from them for yeah. no reason other than the fact they attempted to report somebody else's abuse?
Well, a lot is the answer. And we better bring John Wedger in here, because Metropolitan Policeman reports the cover-up of the abuse of children. He's bullied, harassed within the Metropolitan Police Force. And of course, no support from Westminster, no support from the Home Office. But I understand he did receive a letter from the Home Office in the last couple of days, trying to wriggle out of the fact that they'd lost the report that was produced on his evidence. Strange, that, isn't it?
Yes. Up in Scotland, David, what's going on? Policemen to stand trial for sexually assaulting two women before allegedly downloading child abuse images?
Yes, a very interesting question. Because it ties in with so many other cases we've been following. Now, this is obviously before the courts at the moment, but the accused is Ricky Henderson, an officer at Fraserburgh. Fraserburgh is home to Alan Lowe. People will know him from previous reporting on the Doherty case. And also the Fraserburgh and Peterhead police were involved with the Sean Ritchie case and all of the concerns over the investigation there. Now, this man is accused of multiple sexual assaults on women and on downloading showing or distributing indecent images of children. He's a resident of Stricken, so he shares the town with Alex Salmond. And the sheriff looking at this case is Sheriff Graham Buchanan.
Oh, where did we come across that name before?
Those of you who have followed the Holly Gregg reporting will know that name quite well.
Okay, and what's Peter Kirby been talking about?
Now, Peter's looking at, he's been trying to gather information from Police Scotland, and he's not been doing very well. Police Scotland have refused to disclose secret files on the investigation into the head of Police Scotland, DCC, Ian Livingston. Now, he was accused many years ago of serious sexual assault, or multiple serious sexual assaults, on a woman police officer. And these matters were investigated. We're assured that everything is fine and the investigation was completed, but there appears to be many doubts and concerns that remain. When asked questions about whether information was available, whether non-disclosure agreements had been made with the woman officer concerned or with other people leaving Police Scotland, the police authority said, I quote, "The authority considers that to reveal whether the information exists or is held by it would be contrary to the public interest." So we're not even allowed to know if there are files on DCC Livingston, let alone what's actually in them.
Yes. Stuff going on in Dunblane. This is the Courier. Dunblane massacre relatives show support for Florida school shooting families.
Yes. Now, this is a link to some information that's recently come to light. I would point out here, though, that this is a pattern we see where towns that have experienced these tragedies do support one another and do provide very valuable advice to one another. I remember when the Dunblane tragedy happened, the residents of Dunblane got contacted right at the start by groups in Hungerford with very valuable advice about how to conduct themselves, how to handle the money and donations that come in, and generally how to survive as a community through this. So it's good to see the people at Dunblane reaching out to those in Florida who have suffered the loss of loved ones in similar circumstances. I would also like to highlight a little issue that's come to light regarding Dunblane. There was a resident of Dunblane recently who was tried and convicted in the Scottish court. He had amassed more than 110,000 photographs and videos of child abuse. Of those, 15,000 images and 7,000 of the videos were Category A, the worst category. This man, Mr. Brunton, who's age 71, was a resident in Dunblane since at least the 1960s. We suspect he may have known Hamilton. A couple of strange things about this case. He commenced his collection of child pornography the day after the Dunblane massacre. Now, what are the chances of that if it's not connected? And secondly, all of the reports on this trial seem to have gone from press, from the internet. They're still available in Press Reader, but we found great difficulty getting information on this. And it's only the conviction was only a few weeks ago, so that's quite strange. So we're wondering what exactly is happening there.
Sorry, Brian. Just David, you mentioned that this guy knew Hamilton. Just for a foreign audience or anybody that isn't familiar with Dunblane, just tell everybody who Thomas Hamilton was.
Yes, we believe this man may have had connections with Thomas Hamilton. We haven't got that confirmed yet, but it certainly seems quite likely. Thomas Hamilton was the shooter at the Dunblane massacre.
Okay.
And a man who he ran boys' clubs. He was involved in child pornography and in procuring boys for others, and he was in this world.
Okay. Well, let's move on then to this. This is Goldie now, and some people may know who Goldie is. Goldie is a drum and bass star. Apparently, he has appeared in as a bad guy in a James Bond film and so on. And he apparently was in court for assaulting a doorman at a club or something like that. But why is this interesting? Well, because the BBC here is, the headline is Goldie appears in court via FaceTime from Thailand. So he was appearing in court, charged with this. He was, the article itself is describing him as being quite flippant and so on. He initially pled guilty by email, Brian, and the email read, "Yep, guilty as charged." But that wasn't sufficient for the judge. The judge wanted to see him in person, admitting to his guilt. So he was put on FaceTime. He was asked his nationality. He said very British. He was then asked if he had entered a guilty plea, and he said, "Correct, my dear," to the judge. But the point here is that this is the BBC giving a sort of soft, flippant article which is describing the changes that are going on within the court system, the transformation within the court system in England and Wales, at least. I would imagine in Scotland and Northern Ireland too. Here we've got the government's website inside Her Majesty's Courts and Tribunals Service, Transformation Courts and Tribunals 2022. This, of course, this whole process began with Lord Leveson, the same Lord Leveson that tried to gag the press, yes. And he has been pushing for digital courts in this country. This we see as a danger in the sense that with digital courts comes the removal of the public from the courts. and the ability to follow what's going on. And also, as we know from the Melanie Shaw case, digital connections into the courts, defendants themselves not getting to appear in court personally, and digital connections to the courts dropping.
Mysteriously.
So the question then is that happening through some kind of technical problem, or is that happening because of somebody maliciously disrupting the court case?
We can also talk about the Leanne Smith case, because at one point Leanne was appearing via video link from Spain, and she could hardly make herself understood in the court here in the UK because of the noise in the background around her. So the minimum we can say is this video link is distancing people from the justice system, even just stepping aside from the fact we are saying there are immense problems in the justice system. But now you don't even get into court. This is immensely dangerous stuff.
It adds to the problems that already exist. And sticking with justice in inverted commas here, we've got a petition here, remove the PSPO targeting of homeless people in Poole. This is Poole and Dorset. And basically, people that are homeless are going to be in receipt of fines if they are begging in public. Fines of up to £100, according to the council. So this petition is trying to remove this new legislation, this public space protection orders. It's going to be introduced apparently from the 16th of April in a bid to, quote, tackle antisocial and nuisance behaviours. Now, the councillor who's pushing this forward, Councillor Karen Rampton, has said that we are aware of the increase in antisocial behaviour in the town centre and Halls Bay areas, and the PSPO is a tool we can use, amongst others, to tackle this behaviour. The PSPO will not be used to target any specific group, such as those people sleeping rough. That's not quite how others see it, however, and so that's the petition. She also said we are aware of the increase in antisocial behaviour, and the council proactively works with individuals to encourage them to use the full range of support services available from the council and local charities. So I don't know what your thoughts are on this.
Well, I think at one point we did have some communication with that particular councillor, and she was softer on the phone than it came across with the public reports. But nonetheless, what we see across the country now is that people who are sleeping rough, and that presumably they're not sleeping rough for fun, are now being targeted. They're unwanted. There are special devices been put out in London and other cities to prevent people getting into shelter from the rain in a doorway. So people who are literally on the streets being brushed aside. This is a fascist regime that we're dealing with, Mike, and I don't think there's any question about it. Well, let's bring in this one. David, this brings you back to your good self. We have several slides here, so we'll bring in a couple. BBC trending, why three far-right activists were refused entry into the UK. The article says three activists with big social media followings from Austria, Canada and US have been barred from entering the United Kingdom in a move that some say is a crackdown on the far right. Brittany Pettibone and her boyfriend Martin Selner were refused entry to Luton. Another activist, Lauren Southern, was refused entry by the border force near Calais on Monday. She'd planned to meet with a couple and Tommy Robinson. And so it goes on. I just pulled out this part of it as well, softer targets, because who does the BBC use to provide evidence in this article? Well, it's Nick Lowles, who we mentioned a few days ago, chief executive of the anti-racism campaign group Hope Not Hate, which also listed David Icke and Richie Allen as far-right hate people. This is very dangerous stuff where people are simply banned on a whim. There's no definition of the crime they've committed.
Well, the definition of far right is now, if you imagine a sort of XY spectrum of political views, and if you go to the extreme left and the extreme authoritarian end, that's where love and compassion exist, according to Hope Not Hate. And everything else, everybody else, is far right. Calling these people far right is ridiculous. You take Lauren Southern, for example. This is someone who two generations ago would be quite clearly in the centre of the political spectrum. It's just that it's now a slur word that they paint on people, the same as homophobic, the same as racist. It's to close down debate and prevent ideas being examined and prevent their ideas being questioned. This is what it's about. Now, several things about this, and many things about this trouble me. Firstly, though, the standard of the correspondence that was given to these people is just unbelievable. I've got the one here to Brittany Pettibone. It reads, "You have asked for leave to enter the United Kingdom as a visitor for 5 days, singular. But as you have stated in your interview, comma, I have reasons to believe you are seeking admission to United Kingdom to interview Tommy Robinson." That sentence doesn't make sense. "A far-right leader whose materials and speeches incite racial hatred." That's actionable. That's slander, libel, because Tommy Robinson's not been convicted of any such thing. And here you have the Home Office putting out lies about people. It's ridiculous. It goes on, "You stated at the interview that you'll be filming your boyfriend, Martin Selner," odd use of the word boyfriend in official documentation, "speech at Speaker's Corner in London Hyde Park. Your boyfriend admitted at the interview to being a co-founder of the Austrian branch of Generation Identity, not a prescribed organisation, so I don't know why we're saying anything about that, which is viewed in the UK, who by, doesn't say, as a right-wing organisation." So apparently now right-wing organisations are prohibited. So we're seeing here crypto-fascism coming in because you're not allowed to have different views. "Furthermore, your boyfriend is in possession, your boyfriend have in his possession," it's almost unreadable. "Furthermore, your," with a capital Y, "boyfriend have in his possession the leaflets with scenarios regarding possible violence at his speech." Presumably that was violence by other people like Antifa, and you're trying to be prepared should anything happen. So being attacked is now criminal, it would appear. "I believe that," it carries on, "I believe that your planned activities whilst in the UK bear a serious threat," not sure if the word bear there is correct, "to the fundamental interests of society and are likely to incite," INSIGHT, incite tensions between local communities in the United Kingdom. So it's garbage, it's unsigned, and it's garbage. And then when the BBC quote it, they correct the misspelling and the homophones and the wrong words, but they still put it in quote marks, so they tidy it up. So that's a bit fake news of them.
David, this is really incredible. We've got essentially officials of unknown power and status issuing an illiterate letter which contains threats and libel. And then when this reaches the public domain, the BBC takes it upon themselves not to point out the incompetence of this communication, but they tidy it up and pretend it was written properly. This is fake news. It's propaganda.
It is absolutely fake news. Yes, they put it in direct quote marks, and then they quoted something that wasn't in the original letter, which they had. So, yes, that's fake news. And the issue of excluding people with different ideas, this is fascism. This is fascism. Fascism's not a right-wing phenomenon. It's at least equally, in fact, I would say largely of the left, because you're talking about, it's National Socialism. Mussolini was a socialist before he was a fascist. It's a continuation of authoritarian left-wing thinking. And if anybody challenges it, they will be branded right wing, right? You, me, anybody asking questions, that will be branded right wing. Thinking for yourself will be branded right wing, and calling for free speech will be branded right wing. And now, once you're branded right wing, there seems to be an inference that somehow you're not a proper person. You might be problematic. You might be suspect because of your views. Well, how totalitarian is that?
Yeah,
indeed. Okay, let's move on to defence matters then. So Jens Stoltenberg very proudly unveiled the NATO annual report yesterday. There it is on screen. There he is doing it. Fantastic. After a lengthy downward trend in defense spending, it says. There has been, for the first time in many years, 3 years of increases in a row. It says that this follows the defense investment pledge made in the 2014 summit in Wales, where NATO members signed up to the pledge. It called for allies to commit to the 2% of gross domestic product on defense and aim to move towards that goal within a decade. They also agreed to move towards spending at least 20% of annual defence expenditure on new equipment, including related research and development, in the same time frame at that 2014 summit. So this is all mentioned within the report. And the report says that after years of defence cuts, the trend over the last 3 years has been one of increased defence spending. So let's have a look. The text very small. You can freeze this if you want. This is the league table of NATO members, which shows that the United States is still quite far ahead of other allies in spending. Their defence expenditure is 3.57% of GDP. According to NATO, Greece is at 2.36%, the United Kingdom at 2.12%, Estonia at 2.08%, Luxembourg 0.46%, Belgium 0.9%, Spain 0.92%, Slovenia 0.98% at the other end of the spectrum. And it says that in 2017, the UK spent $55.2 billion on defence, Germany $45.4 billion, France $45.9 billion. So those three main players in European defence are spending roughly the same amount, give or take 5 or $10 billion. This compares to $685 billion from the United States. So Europe still has quite a way to go. But what did Jens Stoltenberg have to say? He said, I think it shows that European allies and Canada are doing more, stepping up, contributing more to our shared security. So we should all feel a lot safer in our beds, Brian, under this concern of Russian aggression and the fact that the Russians are coming to get us, that NATO can talk about percentage of GDP. Vladimir Putin's talking about hypersonic weaponry, and they're showing demonstrations of it. But Stoltenberg can show us his report, and that report is all it takes to defeat Russia, apparently.
This is true. It's very interesting. The start of that video clip, you see him look across to his right, and then he licks his lips. He looks incredibly nervous as he starts this delivery. I think there's cracks appearing in the system. Let's come in with this. We'll just bring it in as a headline. High-level civil servant Victoria Billing OBE laughs as public and voters deceived. Now, this is the so-called Kit Kat tapes. Underneath, I've put they have control. This is a statement that's been made to David Ellis by an MP that we're not allowed to name at the moment. But that MP clearly very, very worried about what he has started to understand is going on in Westminster. And his response to this expose is, they have control. So this is a group buried within the government who are now controlling things. Well, we've got to say thank you to The Sun, because it was The Sun that decided to break this story. Don't have a Brex, have a Kit Kat. Bombshell tapes reveal how top Whitehall officials compared Brexit to a Kit Kat with chocolate layer hiding UK ties to Brussels. Now, don't misunderstand this. This was a secret meeting at the London School of Economics in which high-level British government officials were laughing at the public. The story was also covered a bit later, but the Express revealed civil servants plan UK to fund EU army post-Brexit, caught on tape. And they mention a particular senior civil servant, Alastair Brockbank. He's a defence and security advisor for the Cabinet Office. I think that's him circled, but I'm not entirely sure. If anybody can help us on that, please let us know. Let's have a listen to what was caught on that tape.
On our side, on the Trump Police Defence, we're actually looking for something which I normally call a patronymic, but somebody yesterday called a Kit Kat, which I rather like, where you have the kind of cover of you have the kind of political framework cover, but underneath you have a series of different agreements.
So the heart of that is that basically she is boasting about running a soft, visible campaign to the public. But underneath that, all the detail is taking place, and she likens it to the sort of chocolate layer on a Kit Kat hiding those layers. And she laughs and the audience sniggers at the same time. This is a meeting held in the London School of Economics. It was a secret meeting held under Chatham House rules. And yet there were officials there from UK government meeting with European officials and officials from other overseas countries. What were they discussing? How the British public was to be deceived that under so-called Brexit, we were to continue funding the EU military project. And of course, we have been warning what that is really saying is that UK is to be subsumed into EU military unification. So here's the London School of Economics. We spoke to them this morning. They felt that it wasn't really important enough for them to have made any sort of public media statement. They openly admitted that individuals booked them for secret meetings where discussions were held under the famous Chatham House rules. That means that you can say what was said, but you mustn't say who said it. And of course, Common Purpose was the organisation who loved that. Let's have a look at some of the people that they show here. We've got Johan Berglund, Swedish Embassy in the UK. Victoria Billing, that was the lady that you heard speaking, UK Department for Exiting the EU. Alastair Brockbank, UK Cabinet Office. He's the senior defence man or security man. We've got Gianucci Brusco, Italian Embassy to the UK. We've got another Italian man. We've got Belgium. We've got the French Embassy. We've got Poland. We've got Sarah Winter, Forest Security and Policy Unit, Foreign and Commonwealth Office. And we've got the Embassy of the Republic of Poland. Who's in charge of the whole London School of Economics? It's a lady called Nemat Shafik. She is Egyptian by birth, I believe. I was fascinated to see that prior to taking over the London School of Economics, she was deputy governor for the Bank of England. It's amazing who you find, isn't it? And they were very brusque when I called them. I don't think they liked my call. But here we are. We haven't made a statement so far. We do hold these private meetings, but they're under Chatham House rules. Mm. So let's have a look at Victoria. Very difficult to track down. I can't be more explicit than this because of who owns the pictures. But the lady circled received an OBE in 2008 for her services. Where had she been working? She'd been working as Deputy Consul General, British Consulate General, Jerusalem. This is the woman sniggering at the fact that the British public are being deceived. And she was happy to do that with others in a secret meeting. If you want to track this through for yourselves, this is a document we found talking about the posts overseas from the Commonwealth Office in London. Here's the Jerusalem connections. And there's Miss Victoria Billing. So this wasn't some silly young schoolgirl who was doing this. This is a senior civil servant. Deceit, deception, lies, secret meetings, actions behind closed doors. David, just a short response, and I'll follow on with some of the responses we've had from other politicians.
I was looking while you were talking at Alastair Brockbank's LinkedIn page. So you might be interested to know that he has a BA from King's College London in War Studies and History, focusing on counter-terrorism, intelligence sharing and former Soviet Union relations. And he followed that up with a master's at Cambridge, focusing master of philosophy, focusing on security sector reform in post-conflict states. So that's where he's coming from. He's been at the Cabinet Office, he's been at the Commonwealth Office, and he's been a policy advisor for exiting the European Union.
Fantastic, isn't it? Okay, well, let's have a look. There were some comments by a variety of people. We picked up on what Mr. Rees-Mogg had to say. He said this: it is wrong for British civil servants to be briefing the other side, except in a formal negotiation context. Former civil servants rounded on Brexiteers a few months ago and compared them to Nazis for questioning the traditions of the civil service. And now we have civil servants appearing to brief against their country. Well, there's no appearing, Mr. Rees-Mogg, at all. They were doing it and they were recorded doing it. Is this sedition? Some people might think it is. But how remarkable that if you call for Brexit, you are a Nazi. What a wonderful country we live in. The Kit Kat comment is a clear attempt to hoodwink voters. This looks like a clear attempt to fix the game, and this must be formally investigated urgently. So this is remarkably serious stuff. We understand from David Ellis this morning that this has really caused some shockwaves in Westminster, where MPs, a small number, but some MPs are now starting to ask the right questions. And we'll just bring in this. This is part of the Twitter page for the Department for Exit. I posted on it. This is one of the things we're encouraging people to do. What has the department got to say about senior civil servant Victoria Billing on tape laughing at the deception of the British public over Brexit and EU military unification in secret? So there it is, pinned on their page. But down at the bottom, if we blow it up, somebody had already got in saying, I would like to report a crime, please. Theresa May for treason, action of betraying one's country, and deception, obtaining money, goods, services through lies. She lied to the electorate to gain power. Brexit means Brexit. She's lying to keep the British citizens as slaves. Interesting, the public coming forward. And to remind ourselves how dirty this deception is, let's look at this man, Alistair Brockbank. This is some of the quotes attributed to him. The UK would continue to make significant contributions to EU defence and foreign policy projects after Brexit, claiming they are plans we're all interested in. The country may help to fund Jean-Claude Juncker's plans for an EU army known as the Permanent Structured Cooperation, PESCO. Well, of course, it's not an army, it's full military unification. He claimed the civil service are negotiating the detail of that at the same time as we're discussing the political high-level fluffy bits that will go into any declaration that gets made public. They know what they're doing, Mike. They're declaring what they're doing, deceiving the public while we are locked further into the European Union. And David, you got there before me, but if people want to see what this man is, here it is. And it's taken him just 5 years to move from a researcher into the inevitable charity to a highly influential defence and security policy advisor in the Cabinet Office.
How do you do that?
How do you do that? I think this is another man groomed for the job. Mm-hmm. I think this is of the mould of Common Purpose. I can't say he is a Common Purpose graduate, of the mould of Common Purpose. And the language of that MP, they are in control, is saying we now have a cabal buried in the government, certainly buried in the Cabinet Office, which are now taking control. There is no democracy in it.
Well, we began today with Russia. Let's end with Russia. And we don't need to be scared of them, apparently, according to the Express, because Britain's war chest has been revealed in capital letters. May's missiles and ships ready to take on Putin. So what are they saying? Fears that events could spiral out of control increased today after the Prime Minister boosted 23 Russian diplomats out of the UK in response to the poisoning of ex-spy Sergei Skripal. Should the unimaginable break out and the UK enter a military conflict with Russia, the country still has a formidable military capability. The UK has just over 150,000 active military personnel, with another 81,000 troops on reserve. Well, that's fake news, Express. You haven't been looking at the correct statistics, because the latest monthly service personnel statistics say that full-time trained strength by service in total is 141,880. And the volunteer reserve is only 37,090, not 81,000 troops. So there you go. But although those numbers may sound daunting, apparently, because 150,000 and 81,000 is a daunting number, according to the Express, they put the country well down the list of the largest forces in the world. But they go on to tell us about what fantastic material we have. When it comes to land assault vehicles, the country has around 250 combat tanks. Many of these are Challenger 2 models, one of the world's top mobile fighting machines over the past two decades. Troops can count on a huge 5,950 armoured fighting vehicles, 89 self-propelled artillery, and another 138 towed artillery and 42 rocket projectors. So that's fantastic. The RAF has 888 aircraft, including 141 fighter jets, another 91 multi-role aircraft, and 386 helicopters. The Royal Navy packs a punch with 76 vessels in total, 6 destroyers, 13 frigates, 11 submarines amongst its arsenal. Each destroyer has a daring class. Never mind, we don't have any staff for them, but each destroyer has a daring class, is a daring class guided missile launching model with a range of 13,000 kilometres. This is fantastic. And Britain's biggest warship is the HMS Queen Elizabeth, one of the largest ever built for the Royal Navy. Doesn't have any aircraft, actually, but don't worry about that.
No, don't worry about that. No.
Alongside this technology, Britain still has an arsenal of weapons, including the world-famous Trident missiles. Fantastic. I feel all patriotic as a result of this. Well, actually, Express, if you were doing your job, you would have looked at some of the business plans for the Ministry of Defence. This is one of the Ministry of Defence's business plans. This is the 2012, and all you can see there is you'll need to freeze the screen. The text is quite small. People being removed from their jobs. That's the 2012 business plan. In 2015, it continued. Every business plan is the same, but I'll just quote from the 2015 one. Reduce the number of Royal Navy personnel by around 5,000. Reduce the number of Army personnel by around 20,000. Reduce the number of RAF personnel by around 5,000. Rationalise wider equipment holdings. Reduce the Tornado fleet from 40 to 18. Withdraw 3 variants of the TriStar transport tanker aircraft from service. Reduce the number of Ministry of Defence civilians in the core department by around 20,000. And so it goes on. This has been going on for years. In fact, I couldn't find the 2015 business plan was the most recent that I could find, because they've now moved to a model of just showing relatively high level statistics. They don't show this level of detail anymore.
You wouldn't want to show the detail, no. Mike, because once the detail can be seen, you can see the overall plan.
So, sorry, Daily Express, you are another fake news outlet. Get your act together is what I suggest.
We'll also say that we're using some black humour to cover the subject of the decimation of Britain's military. That no way impacts on the men and women who are currently serving. In fact, we are doing our best to protect the positions of serving military personnel by pointing out the deceit that's going on in Westminster at the moment. David, it's obvious that we've got a criminal cabal now running the United Kingdom. They're trying to use propaganda to cause trouble with Russia, decimating Britain's armed forces. These are very dangerous individuals embedded in government.
Very dangerous indeed. The Russia crisis, manufactured crisis, based on zero proof, based on zero wisdom from our wise overlords, has people talking in the press in this country and across the world of World War III. Has nations gathering together against Russia. You can imagine how this looks from a Russian perspective. It is monstrously stupid. And on the home front, if an MP stands up and questions the civil service, he's called a Nazi. If a centrist Christian genuine conservative, I mean someone who's actually conservative, not a fake crypto fascist, genuine conservative tries to come in to the country to interview some people about the problems in Britain, she's excluded because she's far right, and then hope not hate, papers like The Independent and propaganda organisations like the BBC roll in to say to everyone, this person's someone you should hate, this person's someone you shouldn't listen to. Meanwhile, in the internet, they're losing the battle of ideas. People are laughing at them. Right? Nicola Sturgeon comes into a hall and we're told to all make way, nobody moves. It's a very interesting time. We have completely disjointed parts of the world, the reality, which is increasingly happening on the internet and not in the mainstream media, and this la-la land that we're getting from our leadership.
David, thank you very much. We'll say, reminded people, NHS conference on the 12th of May, more details to come on that, a whole new lineup of speakers. This is going to be very, very important because the NHS is to be destroyed, privatised, sold off to the insurance companies. We've also got the British Constitution Group and the Chartists meeting in Nottingham on Sunday. This is action on the ground. So if you're in the local Midlands area and can get along, have a look at the Chartist, New Chartist Movement website. Action is important. It's not enough to watch these things unfold. If you're a right-thinking individual, and I don't mean that in a political sense, common sense, then we need to tackle what's happening. And taking action, of course, is the thing to do. Action conquers fear. David, thank you very much for joining us. If you're not already a subscriber of UK Column and you're watching today, please subscribe. We can only do what we do with your help. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.